David A. Price presents...
Hello, folks, and welcome to Marvel Noise, episode 352. I'm your host, Steve Raker, joined in the comic book bunker by my pals, WWX Kevin and Andrew the LA Rabbit, for another episode of Merriment in the Mighty Marvel Manor.
So we're covering all issues 352 this time.
I only read one paper comic. I don't know if we'll get to it, though.
The Marvel Noise podcast is proudly sponsored by nobody, but we're happy to benefit from the benevolence of Derek Coward and his Deliberate Noise Network, where you can find lots of great podcasts like Indie Comic Book Noise, where Andrew and Kevin, joined by me and Phil for the good episodes, talk about the indie books that we can't talk about here. And you can find, download, or stream new and archived episodes of Marvel Noise over on marvelnoise.com. New York City Comic Con is canceled due to the COVID thing, folks. So I wonder what Baltimore will do, which is scheduled to occur a few weeks after. Baltimore Comic Con, you can check out details and stay up to date on the status at baltimorecomiccon.com for details on this late October show that really has the best guest list of comic creators this side of the Pecos. Let's hope it all turns out well.
Steve, technically New York's not canceled. It's just going digital.
Wow.
Which should improve the smell.
So did they have a video of a guy just flipping through the long boxes for you? Like, if they set up that, I could probably watch that for quite a while.
They have, like,
no,
they have
gonna
six...
It's going to be a video of a guy with a briefcase full of books right in front of you when you're trying to get your book signed.
I think there I think there should be a few long box, like, cams set up where you can choose which guy to, like, look over his shoulder and see what he's sort of flipping through. That'd be fun.
You can make comments to each other.
There's like a little field and you just sort of just click on it for real time to see the guy flipping through.
You know, if he was doing that and we were all here recording, we could just make comments while we're watching the video and it would be just like being at a con.
Used to love following Chris Campbell and Tom King and Mike Myers around at Baltimore and sometimes Boston when they did their box dives, because they always would have a list or a little black book with checklist kind of a thing that they funny walking out cons with stacks of comics.
Always a good time.
So this episode, we have nothing planned because I'm just back from the mountains on a week, more than a week long camping vacation. And the episode that you are listening to right now is due out immediately. So we are going to just chat about our recent reads and see where that takes us. I did a lot of reading because two of my camping days were washouts because of the once hurricane. By the time it got to me, tropical storm, I had one full washout day in the tent where, man, I caught up on a lot of books. I'm trying to catch up on everything so I can like get start like the Empire stuff, but sort of know what everybody's status quo is already.
Look at you, Steve, being diligent, not just jiving in there. I'm reduced to reading ridiculous digital comics, except, like I said, the one teased at paper comic.
First up, I've got West Coast Avengers, the last series that was, I think, 10 issues, maybe 9 issues.
10, I think.
Written by Kelly Thompson, with art by Stefano Caselli for the first arc, Danielle DiNicolo on issues 5 through 7, Gang Hook Lim on 8 and 9, and the mysterious Moy R on issue 10. And I had to read this because when I was talking about the Deadpool series, you mentioned the West Coast Avengers, and I'm like, you know what? I've had that on my stack. I gotta read this. And this iteration of the West Coast Avengers is the Hawkeyes, Clint Barton and Kate Bishop, America Chavez, Omega Level Mutant Quentin Quire, Gwenpool, and sort of boyfriend from Kate Bishop's last Hawkeye series, Fuse, who's basically a absorbing man type.
No Landshark?
Not yet. The deal is that Kate sold out to fund this team, so they are being filmed by cameras for a reality show. So it's got like a Big Brother kind of aspect where they're all giving testimonials in the house and that kind of thing, and sort of use that to take jabs at each other. And it's actually used well by Thompson throughout the series. The first four issues have the new West Coast Avengers visited by Brodok, this Fabio hair, slightly big-headed, bio-robotic organism designed overwhelmingly for kissing.
Oh, no.
And, of course, it's MODOK in disguise, right? And the team has to deal with that weirdness, as well as AIM's latest foray into twisted biological experiments that result in a 50-foot tigra running amok. The relationships that develop throughout the arc and the series, romantic and otherwise, between the characters really provide a lot of fun moments, and Thompson takes good advantage of that. And heck, even just Gwenpool trying to figure out how to survive being a supporting ensemble character in a comic versus being the lead, because there's a different set of rules that apply and a different set of possibilities and outcome, is a fun twist.
Didn't we see a little bit of that craziness with the when they appeared with Otto there in the Superior Spider-Man?
Yeah. Issues 5 through 7 have the team trapped in an abandoned, modified amusement park by Madame Mask, who sicks Lady Bullseye, the Eel, and Satana on them. And Kate gets split from the captured team, and she encounters her missing, thought-dead mother, who's connected to Madame Mask's operations in some way. So it's here that the team encounters the threat of the Land Sharks, and Gwenpool, Gwenpool ends up keeping an immature one, Jeffrey, as a pet. And yes, it's the same Jeff that currently appears as Deadpool's right-hand man in Thompson's current Deadpool book, which is now up to issue 6. And that's the status quo there, is that he's the king of Staten Island, which is overrun by monsters, and he's got little Jeff there with him. And as if reuniting but not fully being able to trust her mom isn't enough, Kate Bishop also has to contend with the return of her other ex-boyfriend, Noah Varr, the Grant Morrison Marvel Knights Marvel Boy guy.
Yeah.
And that leads into the final three-issue arc, where the team helps him infiltrate and put a stop to a Skrull enclave that's posing like as a satanic cult. But he's totally wrong. It's not Skrulls at all. It's actually something far worse, especially for America Chavez, who ends up in their clutches. It's a really entertaining series. It reads well, it looks great, and remains engaging throughout the whole thing. I would have liked to have seen it continue. Although I'm pretty happy with Thompson on Deadpool right now in that recent title. It's pretty funny how they have him set up there, and Jeff is a great addition to Deadpool's cast because it gives Deadpool someone like to talk to and like complain to, right? And he can't really say anything in response but have like a little expression or like a little squiggle in a thought balloon, you know, something like that, like that he's miffed or something. Let me give one more thing about the Deadpool book, because this latest issue, he sneaks onto Krakoa to try to strike up a truce with the X-Men, you know, like one sovereign leader to another. Uh-huh. And it's a pretty fun ish. Jeff taking out Storm alone in this three panel sequence really cracked me up. Thompson has a really good handle on each character, even when Deadpool visits Krakoa, the Emma Frost, etc. She really gets characters' voices right in the Marvel Universe. I give her kudos, unless it's a he, but I'm pretty sure it's a she.
I was just going to point out, for longer standing Marvel Noise fans, you can dial back to episode 319 We're on Recent Reads. We cover the first issue of West Coast Avengers.
Nice.
Way back when. So you can have a how did they think then versus how do they think now. That was from September 2018. Because I know I read it, and I think Kevin might have as well. So
yeah, I'm sure I was still super hyped up after the Kate Bishop Hawkeye solo series.
That was so long ago, we were still doing Thunderbolts.
Whoa.
As I noted before, Steve, unfortunately, I am not been going to the comic book store, but I know I have, so I haven't caught up as much as you have, but I did read a one series I know that we talked about when it came out, and that's the new Valkyrie.
Oh,
mild
yeah.
Spoilers, it's, can we say it's Jane Foster? I guess,
yeah.
Should I have not said that? I mean, I feel like it's kind of a spoiler, but I also feel like it's sort of central. I mean, I don't want to give spoilers, but it's pretty key to the series, I feel like.
Yeah.
I mean, you could say it's a long-standing character, but they're still learning the ropes.
Nah, I mean, it's part of the deal of Aaron, writer Jason Aaron, trying to tie up all his loose ends as he ended his handling of Thor. I mean, there was he finished up his handling of Thor himself in the King Thor series, which I'm going to mention next since you brought this up. But then there was still Jane Foster's fate to determine, and he did so in a 10-issue Jane Foster Valkyrie series. I mean, it's right in the title of the book. And he's joined by co-writer Al Ewing, and for most of the issues, artist Cafu.
So, I'm not as up-to-date on the thing, because obviously the Marvel Unlimited was buying, but I'd actually bought a bunch of the floppies anyways, so I was all on board with, I enjoyed the thing, but what really struck me, I guess, was, and I don't mean this to revolve around recent segments, but Steve, you had had us reading the old Nova series. And to contrast, I just remember how much I've been really pleased that with Nova, they really made this effort to build his own world and a lot of his own villains and his own things. And not that I'm not enjoying Valkyrie, but like the whole thing is just one existing character after another. And I know it's like a coda to the other series, but I just thought it would have been nice to maybe mix more kind of like, hey, here's her own new kind of world. I mean, I don't know if that fits with having it continue from her as Thor, but it was just funny to have those two contrasted where they went out of their way to make his own villains and she gets Bullseye, who's a villain I'm fine with, but I feel like needs to be maybe put on ice for a while. But I did like the Grim Reaper's appearance. He's always fun.
I mean, if it was going to be the quality of Nova, I would rather with what we got in Valkyrie than... I mean, you got to play to your strengths. I think issue 10 hasn't come out physically yet, so I don't have that issue of the series either, but at least they're going to get around to printing it.
I think the part of the angle was because of what was going on in King Thor, that Thor was almighty now, that someone needed to handle the Asgardian type threats, you know, in the absorbing manner, the Wrecking Crew pops up or something like that, that Thor would usually handle on Earth, because, you know, Thor's attention is on all of the nine realms now, right? His responsibilities.
That's true.
So,
but isn't the Wrecking Crew everyone's villain, Steve?
Yeah, it's true.
You trot out a new book,
but Loki
and you
started.
Need a villain.
Loki started it, so.
And there's no Valkyries to do that duty.
And this was an angle also to, like, they wanted to really tie her into the existing Marvel universe, which I get. And if the book had kept going, I bet we would have gotten some more originality. But what we did get was like a real overriding death theme throughout the whole series. You know, she learns quickly that the Valkyrie isn't a title or a name. It's a duty. It's a job. And her other job as a doctor, because she misses so much time and is so unreliable, she gets demoted down to the morgue, which puts her in touch with dead people and ties both of her roles together, which is kind of cool. The first 5-issue arc starts with her facing Bullseye, as you said, which, I mean, that's not the type of foe I would think to put her up against, but especially since he's riding the former Valkyrie's horse, you know, winged horse, and carrying her sword. But it ends with her teamed with Doctor Strange to repel a Mephisto-augmented Grim Reaper. There's a little more death for you. And then in the second arc, issues 6 and 7, Valkyrie teams up with other doctors in the Marvel Universe. Doctor Strange, Cardiac from Spidey's books, Kevin's favorite character. Excalibur.
I'm looking at Cardiac right now.
Excalibur, the Dr. Fazaya Hussein version. Mannequin, the reluctant hero from Alpha Flight. And the
they say some guy from Canada, and I'm like, I don't even know who this guy is.
And the Night Nurse. And the patient who's in need of emergency services is Death. So they have to go save Death, which again, you know, that theme is just overriding. And the last 3 issues, I did read the final issue, conclude the series with a 3-part arc called At the End of All Things. And it's a team up with Thor prior to Donny Cates' first issue of his new series. And the basic gist is they fall prey to a trap by Tyr, the, you know, Asgardian that shouldn't have existed, who was retconned by Matt Fraction, I believe, right? Wasn't that him?
Fear itself, Steve. Fear itself. And no, that was Boar, right?
No, Boar's... I can't keep all those Boar and, fake... Boar and Beery are the real ones. They're Odin's real brothers.
Yes.
But he ends up stealing Jane's all weapon, which is very Witchblade-esque. She wears it like a wristband, and it kind of morphs into whatever weapon she needs.
I thought that was really fun.
Yeah.
I enjoyed that, and I enjoyed the addition to the mythos that the winged horses talk.
Oh, yeah,
those are two like little people. Like I said, it was good in we're integrating this fully into Marvel. It was just weird how I felt like, oh, I would have liked her own like bad guy, because I don't know who Valkyrie's traditional nemesis would be. I know she had a lot of time in the Defenders.
That's
and,
it.
But I don't know that that's she has you get. Lorelei,
yeah,
maybe
some or Asgardian dude would have showed up eventually that we never heard about.
Yeah, you can give her a new guy, though. Some dude.
Some troll or I don't know, frost, dwarf, hey, giant.
I'm staring at a 3 3/4 you lick right now.
Hey, now.
Don't lick it.
I also have my Marvel Secret Wars Baron Zemo next to him.
Oh, nice.
Need more heroes.
So the King Thor thing is, I think it was 4 issues? 5 maybe?
Yeah.
And that was writer Jason Aaron's coda to his big long run on Thor. That, I mean, that included the God Slayer and the God Bomb, the return of Malekith, the original Sin event, and the appearance of the Jane Foster Thor, and Thor the Unworthy, and the War of the Realms, and now this epic concluding arc, King Thor. And he's reunited with his initial arc's artist, Asad Ribic, which is, you know, it's both a callback and a bookend to that story. It involves future King Thor and his 3 granddaughters as they face a returning Gore at the end of time. And it's all very satisfying and an entertaining conclusion to this really epic run on Thor.
I think those are usually my favorite issues. So much, so much craziness.
Well, I should read. I have some of those floppies, so I can read them. I guess I thought it was going to be like a longer ongoing.
I was a little bit confused at where exactly, like some temporal confusion because of all of Aaron's time jumping as to where he was, like what status quo he was actually leaving our time Thor in. But I guess that's for the next writer to figure out, right? And do what he wants with it. And that new writer, we're now 5 issues into the first 6-issue arc of Donny Cates' tenure on Thor. for bad or good, he immediately throws Thor's status quo into Kate's own cosmic wheelhouse narrative. You've got Thor, despite being the king of Asgard with all the Odin power and everything, he becomes a herald to Galactus to find the right sequence of planets for Galactus to eat that will supercharge him to hopefully fend off the coming Black Winter that is at fault for ending the universe prior to the Big Bang, which is the universe that Galactus comes from.
I think it's a little fight heavy. Like, when you read, like, Jane Foster, you kind of read Thor, and you're like, it depends what you're kind of wanting your comics, because Thor could seem maybe a little more slight than maybe intended, but unless you're really into the fights, you know?
I'm just waiting for it to tie into the, you know, his Venom stuff with the Null God and everything. Oh. Having all this darkness, it's got, I see
I
it coming.
I kept thinking back to that John Byrne story in Epic Magazine, and I'm like, maybe I should go back and read that.
The two positives I took away from reading the first five issues of Cates' Thor is, number one, Nick Klein's art is very good.
Yeah, it is.
It reminds me a lot of Coypel's time on the book. And also, the other positive was Beta Ray Bill made an appearance. Gotta like that.
All horse face.
Well, I also caught up, digitally speaking, on another book that we had talked about previously, and that's Kevin and I were reading Black Cat. I don't remember, Steve, were you reading that one as well?
I started reading it, but it started to lose me, and now I find myself sort of flipping through it and not giving it due attention.
I kept on waiting for someone else to talk about it, to give it a big showcase or something.
So change my mind. Make me want to slow down and read it.
There was certainly, I mean, moments where that I was questioning the book, but eventually it falls into a rhythm, and it's much better than her, you know, her weird status quo before with that weird costume. Like this seems like. I think something I wanted to see, where she would have like her own crew or she'd be trying to fence some stuff. Like it's more.
I like that
stuff
part
like
of
that.
It.
And if you don't have your own book, you don't really get to flesh out certain elements of the character.
Well, that's what
or
I was
going on.
Oh, sorry, Kevin. I was going to say that's what I was feeling the first few issues, but then I feel like it got more like a. Like a 90s comic almost, where it's like, if she's going to cross Iron Man's path, you're going to see Black Cat in like a Iron Man armor that she comes up with somehow or gets, you know what I mean? It feels like it's going to be stunty towards whatever character they're going to, you know, she's going to steal something from, which is a fun angle. She's going to steal something every, you know, arc from a Marvel character or whatever.
Yeah, I think that's what I like.
Towards something because there's an ongoing rivalry with, I guess, was Odessa Drake introduced in Amazing Spider-Man, maybe?
Yeah, I mean, I think, probably. As Kevin pointed out, like, it took a little bit to get the rhythm, but I like she has a crew. They pull the different heists that are kind of fun. She likes to be a bit cheeky. The ongoing overarching or arcing story arc, as Kevin was indicating, about messing with the Thieves Guild. I don't know, I was less interested. I actually liked the mechanics of the, okay, we're going to rip off the Fantastic Four today.
You don't
want to mess with the Invisible Woman and all that stuff. I thought that was fun, like a funny, more fun book, less serious. And it's always hard striking that balance. And I can totally see someone saying, it's not serious enough or too serious. I'm satisfied with the balance, but it's certainly a criticism. I don't mind people saying that, well, you can't be all yucking it up too much if you want me to then take it seriously when she fights the big bad.
I don't want to see Iron.
There are serious moments, but I also like they have her like on date night with Batroc.
Yeah, making him seem more cool than we ever thought he'd be.
I just don't want to see her be Iron Black Cat.
I think that's more of a gag rather than anything else, because she's like you put her into a situation and I'm like, well, what's the logical way? What is she going to do to get out of it? And so, if she's forced to do something, I'm like, why wouldn't you?
So is she going to steal something from Banner and we're going to get a Hulk issue too? I mean, you know.
Oh, that'd be pretty cool.
Everything's coming to it.
I'd totally have all these different... I feel like it's a character I'm not... I was fond of the character in the 80s, but I feel like my attachment to the character has waned quite a bit over the... She's reached that point where there's so many different versions and incarnations that, like with a lot of these characters, it's hard for me to lock into what's essential in the character. And I feel like she's reached a point where you want her to be a good guy, great. Bad guy, great. Like, all the different phases of the world. She's like another Spider-Man character, the Sandman. You want him to be good? Fine. You want him to be evil? Fine. We'll just work the situation around.
Yep.
And to me, that kind of hurts
her. Her previous thing, where she like had this big grudge against Spider-Man, and I was just, yeah. And I was like,
that was pretty forced.
Yeah, so once we got over that, I'm like, okay, we can have some fun again.
I like the way
that ground has been tread by Spider-Man. So it started with the Green Goblin, and then it goes to Venom, and it just feels like there's so many of these villains that have a disproportionate fixation on him, Kraven at some point. And there've been some great stories out of that, but I also feel like we've already got that box checked. You know,
the Green Goblin was in. It had pictures of Spider-Man on his wall, and he's like, "I'm in love with you, Spider-Man." And then he finds out he's Peter Parker, and he's like, "Oh, I can't see that face anymore." And then Venom, it's like another love interest.
Yeah, and same with Kraven.
But I feel like Black Cat sort of flipped that around.
Yeah, I like the way that they portrayed them in the Free Comic Book Day issue. The Spider-Man and Venom Free Comic Book Day.
And that was the annual too, where they sort of got married, but they didn't get married, and they were like, "Do you wanted him to go along to like dupe these dudes?" And it was just like, "But if we're gonna do this," and he's like, "Ugh," and then she sort of tricks him, but not tricks him into it. It was a whole fun romp.
Yeah, she's like flirting and teasing him along, but at the same time, they're still getting, you know, the adventure done or whatever. In the Free Comic Book Day, it's 10 pages of them fighting the Vulture. And it's the good old Vulture, too. Not some new armored Vulture or anything. And that's written by Jed McKay with art by Patrick Gleason. He had a helmet.
Free online, I believe. I mean, I read it on Unlimited, but didn't they make it free online?
If he had a helmet, it didn't last long because she plants his bald head right in her chest when she's greeting him.
Spidey's like doing a little bit of elder abuse there, and he's like, "Oh, stupid."
And then the backup story or the second story is 10 pages of Donnie Cates and Ryan Stegman doing a Venom bit where Eddie Brock is explaining his book's current status quo to the Avengers, and then he gets attacked by this like Flash Thompson Venom, Super Soldier Venom sort of looking character called Virus, who throws pumpkin bombs.
Yeah, I thought that one was a little weak. I feel like I've read this story before, and it's like another Free Comic Book Day where he's like, "I'm gonna go tell people how it is. I'm in trouble, and we need help."
The last few years, they've...
It was like the same thing again.
But Venom's been such a strong book, even though I really don't care for the character that much. But the last few years, Venom has been a really well-handled book by the last few groups of writers and creative teams. And I feel like this is their way of getting people's attention to go try the book because, like, the Spider-Man story is a done in one. It's not like the Venom is like continued in issue 26. Like, come check out the book. It's a hook.
I mean, maybe it'll enthuse people that aren't reading the book.
Right.
Like, for someone that's reading the book, it's, I guess virus is the most exciting thing, but we don't even really know anything.
I think there's something big coming with the whole null thing that's probably going to spread into the other books, too. And if that's the case, then this is trying to get people in on the ground floor, even though the ground floor was last year.
They also need to shoehorn in a fight, even when it's not. Those free comic book days have that formula of, like, tease the event, give some action. Like, it's a little... I mean, I enjoy them, but they're never... I feel like they're rarely as satisfying because of that. I mean, and look, I like comic books to have it, fights and everything, but I just feel there's a pressure on those. They want them to kind of fit, like, oh, you'll get some story, you'll get some fight, you'll get everything.
I mean, I think the X-Men one's a better teaser.
True. That's free. That's free also, right?
The second half with, like, the Dark Ages Tony Stark thing where he loses a leg. I'm like, this is supposed to go out to, like, everyone for Free Comic Book Day, and that's your thing? A plane chops off his leg? It was just... I just...
That's weird.
Stepped back for a second, and I'm like, really?
That's a good point. I'd forgotten it was maybe a little violent for your Free Comic Book Day, but they've done a good job of, like...
I'm surprised that's what you would put there. I'm like... I know, like, the Distinguished Competition had an era where everyone kept on losing an arm, so maybe people are going to keep on losing a leg or a foot or something now. I don't know.
I guess farming that stuff to IDW, the children's line, they're like, oh yeah, now we've got no excuse not to have blood and guts and dismembered heroes.
I mean, it wasn't bad. The freckles thing kind of bugs me with certain red-headed characters, though. Because I'm like, there's not a lot sometimes to tell the difference between some of these characters. So if you mix that up, I'm like, is that Mary Jane or Pepper Potts?
Well, I'm just waiting for them to bring Happy back as the chauffeur so they can, you know, keep Marvel Cinematic Universing the comic book world.
Who's Happy?
His boxer buddy that was Pepper's original love interest from oh so many years ago. But when they did the movies, it's Jon Favreau plays him.
Yeah, but he died.
That was just a sad moment, though.
He died in the comics.
Yeah, I know. But
yeah,
I think
then Tony goes, who's Happy? And then you're like, oh no, Tony.
That's why I'm waiting for him to come back, to be slid back in so they can take advantage of the movies. As they seem to
slide back into a robot body in that Iron Man 2020.
You know, Happy's son is now fully grown, and
yeah, exactly.
Has a similar build,
but we'll never call him that.
He's also eaten a few too many cheeseburgers, and
Nick Fury Jr. Oh, it never gets old.
When he injured his eye, it was awesome. Not my eye!
Oh, no.
Another one I read is a Wolverine versus Blade special from last year in 2019 that was written by Mark Guggenheim with, I thought, incredible digitally painted art by David Wilkins. I sent you guys a page of it, snapshot, just to get an idea of how sharp his stuff was and how, like, brightly lighted the figures were to make it look really 3D. It's a one-shot that has Wolverine in his X-Force stealth duds. And
I totally thought X-Force.
He and Blade are fighting vampires and then fight each other and then fight vampires again. It's simple, straightforward action. You know, it seems too far and few and far between these days that you just get a straightforward issue that's just a nice, well-told tale with a lot of cool action and scenes in it. The art, the lighting, the faces, it really is awesome. It's stamped for mature content because of all the blood and guts. You know, it's Guggenheim, right? I mean, this is the guy who reduced Logan to a drop of blood.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that he then regrew from. But I mean, I just mean to say he doesn't mind blowing, you know, big holes in Wolverine's hide. This one was a nice surprise. I don't expect much from these done in one side stories, but this one was really good.
And Jubilee must appear, because it's Wolverine and vampires, right, Steve?
No, she's cured.
What?
Yeah, but I mean, she must have insight into the community and, like, can give them the 411 on all things vampire.
There's no time.
She needs to take care of her baby, though. You know, Apocalypse is going to use that baby for something.
Of course she is. There was another X-book that had babies being categorized and put to good or nefarious uses or tossed aside as genetic junk. It was the giant-sized Phantom X one-shot that is written by Hickman with art by Rod Reese. And it gives us a pretty detailed, like, it's still not totally clear, but it's, you know, it's Hickman, so it's not really linear, but you get a lot of insight into Phantom X's past, and it ends up being a pretty decent Phantom X story. He is on this continued mission to return to the world where he was raised every 10 years for this purpose, and his method of operations is he goes around and kind of suckers different superpowered beings or groups of beings to join him for some mission to the world, but really all they are is a distraction to deal with all of the death traps and stuff while he sneaks off to take care of this personal business that he needs to do every 10 years. It was good.
Can we escape to the world?
I like Hickman and Reese a lot, but the Phantom X character has never... I mean, I read if... I don't know, it just never clicked with me.
It's kind of... I was thinking of a character like that's from an era that a lot of people like. It's like Gambit. Did you understand Gambit? People are really into Gambit. Then Phantom X comes along, same type of thing. Like, oh, he's so cool and everything, but some people are like, I don't get this Phantom X guy.
Well, I thought Gambit, it was like the romance with Rogue is what got a lot of people. Like, they like that kind of... They can never really be, you know, the... on again, the star-crossed lovers of the two of them, and they've both had pretty hard luck stories, so for them to find each other, but yet her powers, you know, all that stuff I thought was what helped propel Gambit.
I like Phantom X better than Gambit, personally.
Ow.
But I, sometimes the stories, especially when, I mean, didn't he start out maybe Grant Morrison time, or shortly after that? Perhaps, yeah. But they were pretty dense, crazy stories that didn't make much sense, and his nervous system was this, like, little ship that flew around. That was his central nervous system? Like, what? But when you put the character into a group situation or into a story that I can wrap my head around, I really enjoy the character a lot. So, like, this has this reoccurring mission thing where it's like, I don't completely understand what's going on, but I get that he's going back every 10 years and he's like replaying it with different people that he's, you know, conning into joining him as the diversion. And, you know, and other times, again, when he's in an ensemble situation, I think he's cool. Cool design and cool powers.
I think the design's, I don't know, he just never clicked with me. And while Andy's being wrong, I always think of Rod Reese as a DC guy, too.
Fair enough.
But while I'm being wrong, he's done work for them. Or you're saying he's never worked for them, Kevin?
No, I'm just saying that I also think of him as an Image Comics guy. He's done a decent amount of work there on
that's probably
series.
Even better. Yeah. I don't know. I just feel like, wasn't he doing that stuff? But maybe I'm...
Was it GL he was on?
Yeah, one of those Jeff Johns books, I thought.
Yeah.
But it's always hard to keep some of that stuff. I think I've confessed I haven't kept up as much on that, on the DC world. But I always try and read Titans, too, and he did a run there. So that's probably why I think of him with that. Because I mean, not that I'm a religious Titans guy, but they're kind of always my doorway. Batman and Titans.
Ditto.
You guys are big fans.
Read those DC books while you can, folks. Andrew, what have you been Well, if you haven't been reading a lot of books, unless you want to mention the one physical book.
I'll mention the one physical book. Although I feel it's a little bad because we've talked about it before. So, but we've talked about it separately, I believe. Actually, we might have skipped part of it. I don't know. Anyways, it's Strange Tales number 129. As of someone I know has pointed out, while they're somewhat valuable comics, there is still a ton of reader copies of Marvel Silver Age. And I really like reading the paper, old-timey books of this. This is back when it was a split book. So it's Human Torch and Thing taking on the Terrible Trio.
Nice.
And this is Darling Dick Ayers and Frankie Ray. What I like is that... Like, it's weird to think of, like, Dick Ayers' Thing is not a lot of people's thing, I'm willing to guess, as far as all-time Ben Grimm artists go. But he's really good with faces. And the Terrible Trio are some generic, like, a mystic swami, a strong man, and a smart guy. Like, a real gen... But they don't have outlandish outfits that much, so it's a lot of good face work. So it's a really nice book. Despite the fact, like I said, I know a lot of people might not think of Dick Ayers and Ben Grimm being...
To be fair, his forte wasn't superhero comics. It was westerns and war books where he really excelled.
And this is almost like that plot, because like I said, the villains... I mean, the smart guy wears a suit. I mean, the one mystic guy is on a magic carpet with a turban, and the strong guy is just a regular guy. So I feel like it lends to the strengths of Ayers' work. I mean, it's one of those basic Torch stories where his villains break out. Torch has to leave his date, who's playing him off of Peter Parker a lot. Not that Parker's in this one, but, you know, there was the rivalry the two characters had. The Torch is going to run out of flame at some point, as he always does. Ben Grimm's going to come in and help. Nothing dramatic, but I don't know, for some reason on newsprint the coloring is always interesting to see. I mean, some of it's just the printing of the book, but you see different shades of it, and when it's a little bit offset. Plus I love the ads for like the Mary Marvel Marching Society and all the crazy stuff you can get for a quarter or 50 cents or a dollar. The Hypno Coin,
just send $2 to Bob, P.O. Box. Yeah.
They're all P.O. boxes, and the house ads and Grit, which continued for quite a long time. But obviously what's more my speed is the Doctor Strange was the second feature. And this is Beware Toboro. And I know, Steve, you and I talked about this one, the Don Rico, sure, Steve Ditko classic, where he goes on the news program because these non-believers have this mystic artifact that busts out Toboro. And it's just a great... Ditko using mystical realms. So the story isn't anything setting on its realm, but they, Strange ends up having to fight Toboro in this mystic realm. And that's where Ditko, for me, excels. Whether it's the dimension of Dormammu or the astral plane or whatever, it's fun watching him go through these strange shapes and colors and pictures, and Doctor Strange has to duke it out with Toboro. And he wins, surprisingly enough. But it goes back, and the scientists always never end up remembering. You know, they have to get mind wiped so they can be like, oh, magic is fake. Blah, blah, blah. And Strange can go off in the sunset. And then you get to read the letters page. So anyways, if you're not getting keys, people, you can go out there and, you know... Okay, maybe it's $5 or $10 or something, but regular comics now are at least $5. I would suggest, if you have a stomach for it, now I know some people don't like the silliness of the Silver Age, and I can't really refute that, but it really is nice just to go get a beat-up copy of the non-keys and just sit and read it. Now, I have the Omnibus, I have the digital Marvel Unlimited, and they're all fun, but for me, the paper... The reading it in paper is nice.
I got boxes full of beat up Silver Age copies that have been read too many times by me.
Yeah.
Hey, so I like, fun fact
but
about...
But they're acceptable. I mean, you can get these. They're not it's not so expensive. I don't know. When I was a kid, I just never bought a lot of Silver Age because it always seemed like, oh my gosh, they're so expensive. $5 for a comic book. How could I ever?
You know, Frankie Ray, the inker that you mentioned, was Frank Giacoa's pseudonym. And it was the his use of that pen name is what, I think it was Roy Thomas, named Frankie Ray, the character that became Nova, the Human Torch's girlfriend, and then Galactus's Herald. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I just wanted to tell people that, like, you can jump on any of the comic sellers or eBay, and a lot of times if you buy a bunch of them, you can get a decent price. Like I said, you can't get the keys or whatever, but it's just fun to buy. I bought this with a batch of other ones. There was a key. I did want the first Fixer appearance. Kevin knows why. in my quest to collect first Thunderbolt appearances. But I also throw in others because that offsets the shipping. So now that we can't go long box diving, you can still poke around online. They're not that expensive. If you buy a bunch of them, you usually get a deal or something. And they're beat up. It's just fun. And then you got this piece of history. Like, it's more accessible than sometimes you think. Because a lot of the shows, it's always like the expensive wall books, you know, the keys or the super high grades. You know, like that.
Find some modeling with Millie.
Yeah, the stuff that, you know, Tom King and those guys are buying. There's other options other than that stuff.
I also read the latest Ant-Man 5-issue limited series. That was a lot of fun. It was written by Zeb Wells and Dylan Burnett. And, I mean, God help me, but I can't not get Jim Zub and Zeb Wells straight in my head when I'm trying to think about, like, which books they have written. And I can't remember, like, which of them I like and which of them I haven't really cared for yet. But this one wasn't bad. Times are tough for Ant-Man here. He's living in an anthill because he's got no money for an apartment. So because of this, his daughter Cassie is totally losing respect for him. And as this adventure progresses, he's routinely laughed at and disrespected by his superhero peers, often right in front of his daughter, like the Avengers, Spider-Man, the Black Cat. Ant-Man battles the Swarm in the first ish. Swarm, Kevin.
Ooh.
And Swarm was using up all the bees in the area to level himself up to face a trio of mutated humanoid insect tyrants. And when Ant-Man puts down the Swarm, then there's no one to defend against these big insect tyrants now. So now it's Ant-Man has to deal with it, right? So he goes looking to many of his superhero brethren for help, and he just gets turned away and laughed at just about everywhere he goes. His only companion is his daughter, Cassie. She sees him, you know, taking lumps, but rising above it all, and with her help, like, they're going to get through this thing. It's a really good read. The art style, Dylan Burnett's stuff, is really appropriate for the book. I really liked it.
Any appearances by Black Ant?
Swarm seems to be getting not a lot of appearances, but he appears here and there. It's always nice.
Yeah, well, the concept, too. I mean, we saw in that big Spider-Man event, they had the spider version of Swarm. So, everyone likes
Johnny. Spider's Man?
Yeah.
So yeah, now that is the character find of that year.
The Spider-Man Black Cat issue is really funny, too, because Spidey's dissing Ant-Man at every turn, but Black Cat is, like, kind of, like, flirting with him a little bit. And Ant-Man doesn't see it at all because he's so down in the dumps at how he's being treated by Spidey. And afterwards, Cassie's like, you know, she was totally coming on to you. And he's like, she was? And he's like, the reason that Spider-Man was all mad at you and saying all that stuff is because he was totally jealous of you. And he's like, he was? and all throughout, Cassie plays this role of, like, building him up enough for him to, you know, be the hero dad that he always ends up being.
I guess you didn't go to any big premieres this year, Andrew.
No.
For a certain TV series.
No, but a certain TV series has wrapped up. Long-time listeners will know I was lucky enough through various, Marvel Unlimited, this, that, and the other thing, to go to some of the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. events. And after 7 seasons, the venerable TV show has ended. So I did something I haven't done in a long time, and that's I actually watched television as it was broadcast and not off my DVR or streaming or any other way to give the font. Because I did a 2-part finale.
Both the same night?
Like? Yeah. I thought was smart. To burn off the last 2 episodes kind of back to back. I think obviously going to these events has predisposed me to like the series. I'm not immune to the criticisms against the show, but I feel like they really stack their cards on finding people who responded to the main core of characters. At the end, it's driven by how much you like those characters and how much you want them to succeed and enjoy the ups and downs. I do feel it was a weird beast. Like, it was definitely hampered by comparisons to the movies and the Netflix shows, which always had much better fight scenes. And so to the extent you would go there, and even though it was a network show, I would feel it was a lot of CGI and a lot of just not great fighting. And when I say that, look, I'm a kid that grew up with the Hulk and Wonder Woman, 2 shows that had not great fight sequences, but it was compared to what you were watching at the time. And I feel like the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., it's a hard situation. Do you recruit actors or fighters? And I think it's smart to go with actors because you want that emotional connection. But as a result, the fight sequences now, I mean, we all have pretty high standards. I think despite what we felt, did anyone feel the Daredevil fight scenes weren't good, even if you didn't like the show? Like, I mean, you might have a few criticisms, but I think you'll find it was generally well executed on that kind of mechanical level. Likewise, they lean into some of the CGI at moments, so those create opportunities to be disappointed. Additionally, the continuity got really crazy because, again, they're driving for a fan base that really wants to see how these characters react. I've always compared comics to soap operas, and this was the perfect soap opera. So they would kill characters, bring back robot versions, or bring back alternate dimension versions or timelines. And so some of this by the end was even over my head. Now, I'm generally okay. You just tell me the rules and I'll follow it. I think Kevin and I got into it a bit on Avengers Endgame. Like, I don't really care. I don't think time travel works. So if you want to tell me how your time travel works, I just, like, hey, that's your time travel, so screw it. I'm just going to, you tell me the rules. But even this show, I feel like the second to last episode was actually better. The last one, it really just got, I think they needed to kind of wrap it up. And some of the mechanisms, because I didn't understand. The last one was all about time travel. And then one team stayed behind and the other went ahead and then they catch up. And all that stuff just kind of, I don't know, maybe I'm dumb or maybe I don't care. I don't know why it doesn't. Like, I just want whatever rule you have to tell me and I'll follow that along. I don't really want to get into the minutiae of why or when. And again, it involved a key fight sequence. And while Chloe Bennett is a fine actress, they're really obsessed with having her be an action hero. And I don't want to be mean, but I just don't think she has the chops or the training, or maybe it's a fight choreograph or whatever. But every episode they have her get in these big fights with people, and I just don't buy it. It doesn't sell to me. And I don't know why they want that to be a linchpin. So to have her do the big fight at the end as part of the key resolution, wasn't. I mean, I like the character and I like the actress, but having her resolve it in a big fight is not the solution I would have picked. But then again, I don't feel like any of them are necessarily great fight choreographers. But I have a fondness for the Phil Coulson character, and I think Clark Gregg's a fun actor. Like, he seems to have a real genuineness to him that he can portray. I don't know if you guys... He had a long run on...
Yeah, he's super likable.
The New Adventures of Old Christine and stuff.
Yeah, he's super likable. They lost me with Handsome Deathlock. That was...
Oh, yeah, it wasn't good.
I just couldn't... I just didn't want to subject myself to it anymore.
I mean, I enjoyed Mockingbird when she showed up.
And then when... I think the very next season or arc was a Ghost Rider thing... That I started to watch, but it started to come out like irregularly. There was some sort of hiatus, or maybe that was when there was a writer's strike, or I can't remember the circumstances, but I remember just totally getting the rhythm totally getting lost and the gap being too far between things, and I just got away from it.
The Ghost Rider, I think, was a high point. I don't know if it's true. It's been leaked or surmised that it was just too expensive, like that because it's all that that's all expensive CGI to have him run around with this flaming skull and all that stuff. But I enjoyed those sequences. I thought this last season was fun, but again, it's really steeped in the continuity of the show, and at times I don't remember. Like, they have all these callbacks to different events, and I'm like, yeah, I was vaguely aware of that, but it wasn't like, oh my god, I'm so glad to see X character back.
Here's what was really happening in the background of that scene.
And I'm like, well, I don't remember the scene. But some of that's also me. Like, I'm not... I thought it was a smart plan to try and engage the people that really reacted. Like, find your real fans. Make it dense. Make it deep. Put your characters through. Like, have a couple love interests. Like star-crossed lovers, in this case, the two scientist people who can never get together. And I guess a minor spoiler. We're near the end of this, I think. So I think that... So skip a minute or two. I think, and this is going to sound mean, I think having one of the main characters die as a sacrifice, maybe halfway through the penultimate or the ultimate, might have had more resonance. Because they did the meta commentary thing about this team will never be together again. They'll never be together again. And then they aren't, but there's no real story reason. They just finish the mission and all go on to other stuff. And I'm like, I think having the death of a character would give a story reason why they're never going to be together again. Like, it could never be the same. Like, pick one. Coulson, the Clark Gregg character, had already been reduced to a robot simulation version of Coulson. So maybe you could have, but I can see how they want to keep him alive. But just pick, roll a die or whatever. That gives you your story reason why the team will never get together. And it also gives that anchor about how this was a moment and a time and we'll never get that back. But we love that moment. You know what I mean? Like a turning of the page rather than just, it was just decreed that they're done. And some of the people retired, some went on, but it didn't seem to be a reason why they couldn't go on, except some people didn't want to.
Ratings.
But I think a death of a character would have been like, oh, we can't, it's not the same without Jimmy here, whichever one, I don't.
Not I mean, Jimmy. I can see you
probably.
Jimmy Woo?
What do you got against Jimmy? I can see
you probably want to keep the romantic couplings together. So maybe you take out Melinda May, maybe you take out Daisy, I don't know. I doubt they would have. They seem very invested in that actress. Maybe they think a spinoff or so. I don't know. I just felt something like that galvanizes the team. Everyone's like, oh my god, they're real. Especially if you do it early enough. There are real stakes. Like, that character's gone. Like, that character's gone. Of course, like I said, they've brought back so many characters through all the different machinations. But it was a fun roller. I'm glad I took time to watch the last one. I've been to all those events. Like I said, the people behind it are just great. Everyone's been super nice. Everything I've went to, they don't have to do those things where they invite regular people. Like, it's just a nice thing to do to help engender that good feeling, and it kept me watching the show. But I think it also needed to kind of wrap up, because they had to do all those weird storylines because they had to avoid the movie continuity. So they went into virtual reality and time travel and deep space and all that sort of stuff to avoid all that. But yeah, it was a I'm sure it's on Disney Plus or going to be there at some point. I don't know. It's a lot of episodes. But if there's something you like, I was talking to Kevin on Twitter. The Darkhold, Steve. The Darkhold. I held it in my hands at one of the events.
Oh, that's cool.
I didn't have time to find the Montesi formula, though.
That's not the page I'm looking for.
And the Absorbing Man. And like you say, the Deathlock might have not been done great. But it's just fun to see. I'm always surprised when they have larger characters that they're going to use in that setting. But maybe they'll... I mean, they can always reuse them in a different setting, too. But yeah, that's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. It was a weird show, kind of. And it also was transitioning. I feel like Network is really in trouble, too, for various reasons about losing. I know I don't watch much TV. I'm on Netflix and Disney Plus and all them other ones more. That I'm probably watching that stuff.
Still waiting for those Marvel shows to come out on Disney Plus, and then I'll sign up. But I guess they were delayed.
They have some of them on there. It's weird. They have Runaways, the first season, but that's a Hulu show, which I don't understand.
Still a Marvel show.
True, but you'd think the rights would be with Hulu, because Hulu's still around. Like, it was just one of those on. But yeah. That's where I watch a lot of the weird cartoons, like the Spider-Man cartoon and Spider-Woman cartoon and all that stuff.
It's fun. We'll get to our Baron Zemo show eventually.
Hey, he's been on. He was on, had that nice arc in the 90s Avengers cartoon, which I know you loved. The Iron Man and Force Works cartoon.
What?
Or maybe it was just the Avengers. I thought I sent you that clip where, yeah, it's him and Whirlwind and the whole lot of them
was the one where they had all the armor.
Yeah, that was not a
that was rough.
Not a great cartoon. But and the recent one of the recent Avengers cartoons had the whole Thunderbolts storyline.
Yeah.
From maybe 5 years ago.
If only that had been on the Spider-Man cartoon that's actually good. I don't know. That I don't know what it is. It was just so weird that we had like the good Spider-Man cartoon and the good Avengers cartoon, and then we had to like lose them.
Yep.
And it's like we clawed our way back.
Yeah, you're not.
It was really unfortunate timing.
Probably my favorite will always be the Sony Spectacular Spider-Man series. I think that was my favorite Spider-Man overall. But obviously, when you know, all the deals with Marvel and everything that and Disney, that ended all that. But that was the one I think that stands... I mean, I haven't watched it since it was airing, but that's the one that stands out for me as the one I like the most.
And I remember going back to, like, the Fox Kids, like, early 90s one, like, years later, and I'm like, why does everything seem like it's in fast forward? Like, everyone's talking really fast, like, advanced. It's like a compressed comic.
Although I didn't.
What is happening here?
I like that.
I don't remember it being like that.
They had continued stories and stuff, which was
pretty nice. Yeah, they
did. And
they had some good ones.
Good guest stars and villains. Yeah.
So that one, I mean, I didn't watch it at the time, but coming upon it maybe 10 years after the fact, I enjoyed, like, just... That was also one that was fun enough you kind of dropped the needle. Like, whatever was on the DVR or whatever, I would just watch if it was in order or out of order. And I thought it was a really high quality. I mean, the animation wasn't styled into anything, but just to have this ongoing storylines and all that stuff.
I mean, I probably would have preferred that animation to some of the things that animation did in the 2000s. If they would have had that 90s animation on that Avengers cartoon where the Thunderbolts showed up, I probably would have enjoyed it more.
I feel like animation has not kept up. I mean, there's so many shows, but I look, if you don't look at the material, you just look at the actual animation, I feel like there's been a move to really cheap, fast animation over like lush visuals and a lot of stuff.
I don't know, because it seemed like there was a lot of like South Park, or we'll just have someone like be pulled along the screen on a string, and we'll just cut out like the animation frames in between, so he just sort of jerks around on the screen. Like, I feel like we've moved past that, or at least I don't see a lot of those, so it's not as good as it was, but it's not as bad as those were.
I feel like it's 2020. Like, it should have been. I feel like we all just accept that, like, even like the network shows, and I love The Simpsons and everything, but I don't feel like it's particularly visually elevated in any way, aside from a few experiments. And I feel like all the other ones that come out, they're fine, but they're not really pushing the images. I even watched the Transformers one on Netflix, which was fine, but nothing that blew me away, I feel like.
I mean, the Castlevania was fine animation, but not great.
All right. Why don't we wrap up this episode of Marvel Noise there as we wander into the dark jungle of animation in the last 10 years. But thank you, Andrew and Kevin, for being here on the show, as always.
Thanks, Steve. I mean, you know, we like getting on here.
Next episode, we'll probably be able to tell you the what, why, and how of the current Empire event, and maybe get back to our classic deep dive Marvel Tales segments with Nova or New Warriors, or maybe even some Doom 2099.
Whoa.
So until Phantom X reveals he was faking his accent all along.
Oh no.
Make mine Marvel.
He's French, right?
Later. Au revoir. There's a natural...